We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 249. So, Scott, last time we recorded, it was Monday morning before this Baltimore series. It's been 3 days, four games, a billion Manny Machado rumors. I feel like it's been a very, very busy week in Yankees land.
It has been, and we've only been playing the Orioles, a team that we should absolutely manhandle. And until tonight, which is ironic because we've been timing Sonny Gray's starts, it seems like every time we record a podcast, we actually have good things to say about this guy. And tonight, he was probably the, you know, one of the very big shining positives of this series, because it could have gone very bad. I mean, we kind of laid out this scenario as our worst case. Like, we're fearing this scenario on Monday that the Yankees go into Baltimore and just get destroyed by the Orioles. And it could have been like that if Sonny Gray did not throw a good game tonight. So that's a positive. That's a very good thing. The 2-2 feels a lot better than a normal 2-2 does because of the way it happened.
But 2-2 against the Baltimore Orioles, who are on pace to lose 116 games, is atrocious.
Totally understand that, but it feels better than I thought it would.
It's been unbearable on social media, on Twitter, Facebook this week, and with Yankees fans thinking just hashtag DFA everyone, fire Cash, fire Aaron Boone, go out and trade for Manny Machado, go out and trade for Jacob DeGrom and everybody else. It's just like, the world is coming to an end as they're struggling, playing down to the wretched Baltimore Orioles. But it's, I think, fair to criticize the team for playing like such crap against this team. And when it's laid out in front of you that the Red Sox have crushed the Orioles and crushed all these bad opponents this year, and the Yankees have struggled against the Orioles, that is right now the difference in the AL East.
Yeah, no, it's a big difference when you see what the record is from the Orioles and the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Orioles. I mean, there's your difference. The games with against the Orioles, Yankees are 5-5, and what are the Red Sox? 9-1, something like that. So there's a huge difference. The Red Sox seem to be taking care of it. And that's what we were talking about. That was one of the big narratives in the beginning of the season, right? Is the Red Sox are playing lesser competition. They haven't played anybody yet. They haven't played anybody good. Well, now they're starting to play some teams that are decent. Not totally lately. I mean, Washington's playing.
We thought maybe Washington would be a more difficult opponent for them a few weeks ago, but Washington's been struggling. They swept Washington, swept Kansas City.
But they're taking care of business. That's the thing.
Like, taking care of business.
You can't really put that aside too much as when you beat a team that you should beat, because, you know, a lot of people use that as a given. It's a given. You should beat this team. You're going to beat this team. Well, the Yankees have not been doing that with the Orioles now, obviously with a 5-5 record, 500 against the Orioles, getting swept by Tampa. Like, these are games that will come down at the end of the season, and we're going to look back on and say those were important games. And the Red Sox are not doing that. Granted, there's a long way to go still, but
I'm sure
it's a big difference right now.
It's still a very long way to go in the season. The All-Star break is next week, so there's a whole quote-unquote second half to play. But we had said the difference in this division is going to be the 13 games that the Yankees and Red Sox, actually now 10 games that the Yankees and Red Sox play against one another. But if the Yankees can't take care of business against these bad teams, then maybe those games won't really matter. It doesn't matter if the Yankees win the majority of those 10 games, if the Red Sox can build up a cushion by crushing Kansas City and Texas.
Well, the thing is now, if that's the case and they're taking care of business and the Yankees are not, what it's going to do is it's going to put the Yankees in a position where they're going to have to win all of those games rather than going in there playing them tight.
Which is unrealistic.
Which is unrealistic. And then you're going to have to, you know, edge out the series win. You will have to take, you know, a majority of them down the stretch, and that is that's something that you can't really ask a team like that to do, because it's just not going to happen.
No, not with how closely matched I think the two teams are.
Yeah, and especially when you have a guy like Chris Sale who can go out there and throw against you on a given day. And I mean, who knows, they have some pitching that is starting to do a little bit better, but we all know the other guy, Price, will struggle mightily. But you can't rely on just the one guy that is their number two. I don't think you could walk into a series knowing that you have to beat them four or five times towards the end of the season, that you're just going to beat up on David Price every single time. I mean, history tells you it's going to happen. You can't rely on that, though.
We're going to get into everything quickly. Before we do, though, just remind people how to get tickets to the July 22nd event if they still want to come to that, and also some more events coming up later in the season.
Yeah, so we still have tickets on sale for the Mets game. The t-shirt cutoff was earlier this week, but I did order extra t-shirts, so I should have enough to cover everybody at the brewery. So no fear, you will get your t-shirt still. And yeah, so sign up for that. There's still, we have like, I want to say there's like 40 tickets left, something like that. So go out and try to get those, get your crew together and get on that, because they will be going soon. I guarantee by the end of the week, they're all gone. So go on the website and do that. And then the next one after that is the August 18th game against the Blue Jays. And that's the 1998 celebration game where we're doing breakfast beers for 20 years at the dugout. We'll start that at probably 10 a.m. Nice little early breakfast beers to get that going and celebrate those boys. But yeah, they're going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. The game against the Mets, the pregame is going to be at the Bronx Brewery, and the t-shirt is out. We made I did a special design of the baseball is better in the Bronx for the Subway Series for this event. So I'm excited to see those.
And for those people who were at the May event against the Angels at the Bronx Brewery, you'll know we had the whole back area packed. People were playing cornhole, like giant Jenga. There was a DJ going. We had some food back there. So it's a really fun atmosphere at the brewery. And also September 15th is the last event we have of the season. That's also against the Blue Jays. Still details to come on that pregame party, but that'll hopefully be a nice warm-up for the playoffs for the Yankees. All right, so they split the doubleheader on Monday. That's what we said. The cliche goes, you usually split doubleheaders because it's hard to sweep those games, except it didn't go how we thought it was going to go. Sabathia, they lost that one with him on the mound. He struggled. And then Luis Sessa comes out and throws six shutout innings.
I love it. This is the guy that I've been waiting for, you know, to take a little bit of the next step, because it seems like he's come out and I've always said, I think he has good stuff. He throws the ball hard. He does work his pitches up and up of the zone, down in the zone, in and out. He works very well. I'm impressed with the way that he does pitch. It just seems like he can't finish anything. It seems like he hasn't been able to finish starts or really get deep, and he's just not executing further into the game. And we saw that. Finally, we saw that. We saw all of his tools come to fruition and actually play for an entire game. So it was impressive to see.
And you kind of see watching those two games on Monday why it is hard to sweep doubleheaders, because the Yankees lost game one in terrible fashion. The Orioles came back against Sabathia in that game. Neil Walker made a key error in the sixth inning. Aaron Boone probably leaves Sabathia in there too long. He's trying to stretch him out because he knows the bullpen is going to be stretched thin in the doubleheader. It didn't work out for them. The Yankees even almost came back against Britain in the ninth inning. It didn't work out. But then there's no momentum for the Orioles. The Yankees come out and bash 17 hits and score 10 runs in game two. So that's sort of why the schedule with all these doubleheaders, and the Yankees are not done with doubleheaders, right? They have another one against Baltimore later in the season.
Yeah, it seems like they have another one every week.
So it's just these scheduling things that, because of all the rain, we kind of said it at the time, it's going to come back to bite him in the ass. And I think it did this week.
Well, yeah, I mean, it really makes you do different things too. I mean, it makes Aaron Boone line up the pitching schedule differently. It makes, you know, certain guys can't play two games. You don't want to wear them out, especially when you have consecutive games after that. So you have to manage your club differently when you have these doubleheaders. And when you start throwing more of them in, you know, rather than the you know, sporadic one or two in the middle of a season, then yeah, it's going to throw a complete wrench into what you're doing. And who knows what your team is doing on the given day. I mean, the funny thing about the Nationals, if you remember the Nationals doubleheader, the Tyler Austin hit a home run in the game. Tanaka was the starting pitcher, and neither one of them were on the team at that time when they resumed the game. So like crazy things happen when you start resuming games and playing doubleheaders, and you just it's those games that are completely that come out of nowhere.
And neither was the guy who won it for the Nationals, Juan Soto. He wasn't even in the major leagues when that game started. Right. So, yeah, that's baseball, Susan.
Right.
But it's just frustrating because Baltimore, you can tell, is in full tank mode. The only guy they have on their roster still is Manny Machado. We're going to get to him, Manny Machado, and everything in a few minutes. But they threw out there Yeffrey Ramirez and Jimmy Yacobonis, who someone tweeted me, which I thought was perfect. Jimmy Yacobonis sounds like Kramer's friend that lives in the Village. They had two career starts combined coming into that game, and the Yankees still couldn't sweep it.
Yeah, it goes back. It gives me flashbacks of when the Yankees couldn't do anything off of guys they saw for the first time as a lineup. It's strange when you see those guys come out. I mean, the Orioles have nothing as far as starting pitching goes. Nothing. They have absolutely nothing. This whole series should have been, you know, them teeing off on Orioles pitching. I mean, and for the most part, in some or certain games it was, but you got to do more than that off of game one. But like you said, it's tough to win those. Tough to win both of them.
And then after the game, after the first game, Brandon Drury sent back down to the minors. I thought Boone had a quote, an interesting quote. He said that Drury is probably devastated and that his demotion, he called it terrible news to have to give a guy that is a big leaguer and doesn't belong there.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's been a brutal season for the kid. It really has. He comes out of spring training, wins the third base job, and then has to go on the DL because of this tunnel vision thing where he can't see and has migraines and these you know, all these issues going on with his head. I mean, that's he finally lights up AAA and comes back and struggles again. It's a tough season for the kid. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, he only hit 136. He was 3-for-22 with one extra base hit since he was recalled. But there is some good news for Drury, and that is that he can play in the AAA All-Star game now.
That's a big positive.
Silver lining in this.
He is an All-Star. It's just going to happen in Tacoma. It's going to happen in some
small in Columbus, actually.
Okay, Columbus, Ohio.
Yankees AAA old stomping grounds, Columbus.
Yeah, the Clippers.
Can you imagine, though, Neil Walker walking around that clubhouse sort of just with his eyes down, not wanting to make eye contact with Brandon Drury?
Yeah, Drury seems like the kind of guy that will, like, try to make eye contact and, like, lock eyes with you just to try to intimidate you. I could see him doing that. And Neil Walker doesn't seem like he's a very aggressive guy. Seems like he's more on the passive side. But, you know, he's got the veteran presence, so, you know, he probably thinks that the kid's trying to come up and I don't know. Who knows? Maybe he stole his glasses because he couldn't hit in the major leagues. He might have done something.
He did also only get 23 plate appearances. It's not like he was getting everyday playing time.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, this has been the problem so far with the utility guys not named Torres. We're seeing these guys that who don't get their
just
playing
nowhere
time
to be seen at this. Like,
yeah. Is that a short joke?
No, it wasn't. No, all these guys getting called up for doubleheaders and injuries and all that kind of stuff. And Ronald Torres is not one of those guys.
Yeah, but we still have yet to see a guy who can come in, step in as the utility guy, as he has done in the past so well, and been able to hit. Nobody's been able to do it so far. Neil Walker's gotten a few hits lately, but, you know, Drury came up, wasn't able to hit, and, you know, we're not seeing Wade. We know it gave ample time to do it. He had a great game tonight, and I'm happy for him. I'm glad he finally got that back going, got his first major league home run. That was awesome. But it's just one of those unicorns the Yankees are trying to find is the actual utility guy that they want, because apparently Ronald Torres is not the guy that they want.
They want Tyler Wade.
They want Tyler Wade to be the guy. Yeah, for sure. He hasn't been that guy yet.
We know he's fast. He pinch ran in Toronto and had an unbelievably fast turnaround. Like scoring from second, he was unbelievably fast. Great slide. We saw his him playing on Wednesday night in Baltimore, hit the home run. He had a double and also beat out an infield single. So he has the ability that a lot of guys don't. He has better ability than Ronald Torres. It's just, can he play in that role, like you just said?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think everybody understands that he's got the superior talent and the superior tools, especially when you see him. I mean, even tonight, he had a little dribbler. He had a three-hit game tonight. Had a little dribbler down the third baseline. I mean, there was no opportunity, no chance whatsoever for him to get thrown out because he was
three steps past the bag by the time Beckham had that throw.
It wasn't even close. So his speed is an absolute weapon. And when you get later in the season, having a guy like that, I mean, he'll be up later in the season anyway because the rosters expand. But, I mean, he's got an opportunity to play himself into a role right now that could be a very pivotal role. Because even if he's not playing on a given day, he's absolutely a weapon off the bench as a pinch runner because the guy can fly and he's a good base runner.
And he's a good defender.
And he's a plus defender, no doubt about it. And he's a natural shortstop.
Right. Do you think, going back to Brandon Drury, what is their plan with Brandon Drury? Do they even have a plan?
I don't think they have one at this point. I think they're just kind of playing it as it goes. I mean, when he first came up again, you know, when he came up this last time, Boone came out and said to the media, yeah, he'll be on the team for the rest of the season. That's where he's going to be. And we saw what happened. I mean, you can play yourself out of the lineup as well, too. When there's that much talent on this team in AAA, and there's that many options that have to be moved around because of pitching and these doubleheaders, and like, you're going to find yourself off the roster if you're not hitting. It's just the bottom line. So, and Tyler Wade knows that too. I mean, he'll be the next to go if he's not hitting as well. So, I don't think there really is a plan. I think they're just going to go with the flow, you know, see whatever's in front of them. They're going to, you know, fill that need.
Speaking of DL and guys returning, Masahiro Tanaka came back. He was on an 80-pitch limit. He threw 4 1/3 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, exactly 80 pitches. I believe I counted 1 fastball in his first 25 pitches, which is classic Tanaka, what we talked about in the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah, it's I mean, I don't know. It's really hard to take anything away from the start because you could tell he was just out there like throwing pitches. He was definitely laboring a little bit. He wasn't totally sharp. Didn't throw all his pitches, like you said, not that fastball. And we saw when he was good, when he started actually getting back into, you know, Tanaka form as it seemed, he was throwing that fastball more often. He was actually showing it. And I think that's such a key thing. Like, no matter what the pitch is, for Severino, it's the changeup. For Tanaka, it's the fastball. For Sonny Gray, it's just throwing the ball over the plate and not watching Netflix. But you know, like, there's a thing that you got to do, and you got to show the fact that you can throw different pitches. And so that's why I'm not taking really anything. I think this one was a let's get out there, let's, you know, make sure you're healthy, get through a start, get that confidence up that you can feel good with your body, and then you know, we'll go from there.
Sure, I'm not going to overreact to anything from this game from Tanaka. I guess if you want to find a positive in this, both of his hamstrings stayed intact.
Yeah. I mean, do you have to push more on your hamstrings when you're throwing a fastball? Maybe. Maybe that's a thing.
He properly stretched before the game. He rubbed some Icy Hot on it, so no issues there from the hamstrings.
Yeah, Yakabonus. All good.
I think Boone probably brought him back out for the fifth inning, and that was a mistake. You got Manny Machado leading off the inning, who is a Yankees killer. I believe he has 1,000 home runs career against the Yankees. And we know that Tanaka was on the 80-pitch limit. He was in the low 70s when he comes back out for that fifth inning. So what is best case scenario there? He gets Machado and the next guy, and he's at 80 pitches, and then you pull him. So for 2 extra outs, you're going to sort of risk the game at that point, which was the Yankees were only leading by 1 at that point. And instead, what Tanaka does is he serves up a first pitch meatball to Machado, and he hits it 440 feet.
Yeah, classic solo home run by Masahiro Tanaka, leaving the ball over the plate. And Machado has been crushing the Yankees for his entire career, and had did so, you know, again on that day. You know, I don't know. It's hard to, you want to leave a guy like tonight, you want to leave a guy feeling good when he walks off the mound, or at least feeling good enough. You know, in Tanaka's case, I don't think he was really looking for an expectation as far as, you know, like a great pitching line, but he wanted to get healthy, feel healthy at the end of the outing, and have an opportunity for the Yankees to be in the game and win the game. And I think that's what happened after 4 innings. So, you know, the fact that he was so close to that 80 limit, it's a easy second guess because of the home run. But I don't know. It's I think they wanted to get to that pitch limit, and I think that was one of the more important things, and that's why they sent him out.
Yeah, I mean, but if you're telling me that this is 5 starts from now and there's no limits on Tanaka, fine. Absolutely, you bring him back out in that situation. But Boone needs to understand the situation, I think. And in the 80 pitch, what's the difference between 73 pitches and 80 pitches?
Well, there's a difference because he's starting a new inning. So he's able to stop in the fourth, come rest for the half inning, and then come back out and start throwing again. So you're getting that stop, start for another inning. And I think that is beneficial for a guy that's coming back and trying to get his arm, you know, back in shape. That is beneficial. You're getting, I know it looks like the 7 pitches doesn't make a big difference, but I think it's the stopping and starting again to get back out there and then, you know, rear back up. You're still getting all those warm up pitches. You're doing the whole routine. You're, you know, getting closer to a full start.
I don't know. Read the game, read the situation. I don't like it. I didn't like it. It was his 52nd home run that Tanaka allowed since the start of 2017, which is tied with Ian Kennedy for the most in Major League Baseball.
It's a lot. Former Yankee great.
Yep. And then the bullpen ended up coughing the game up on Tuesday. Chad Green gives up a two-run shot to Machado. And then Betances, they walk off on Betances in the ninth inning on a ball that I think most people are in agreement Greg Berg could have had.
Yeah, so it was one of the, that was a frustrating game. That just the way that that game ended was extremely frustrating. Chad Green, I mean, you can't really give any grief to Chad Green because he's been so good. Machado was a guy who beat him. The only thing you could say is why you pitch into him. How about we just not pitch to Machado? But I feel like I've been talking about this since I was a little kid.
It's the same story we had into
all the Red Sox series with Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz. I mean, they would never walk them or never pitch around them.
And Tampa with Longoria. It's the same
ludicrous.
Shit.
Anyway, but Chad Green gave up a home run. Tip your hat. That's it. But the Betances inning was frustrating because I thought he looked good. I thought his stuff was good. I know he hit a guy. He was not getting great calls from the umpires, but I don't know. I thought he still looked good. I didn't think he looked terrible. He probably should have gotten out of the inning because he got the big strikeout and then got a ground ball to Greg Bird. It was a hard hit ground ball. It did look like he was shielded by the runner a little bit and it just kicked off his glove. So yeah, if you're looking at that, Greg Bird probably says I should have had that play 10 out of 10 times. Just didn't make it.
Yeah, like we were saying before we pressed record, the difficulty on the play, I put it at like a 7 out of 10 for two reasons. One, it was hit hard by a right-handed hitter opposite way, so you're not really expecting him to hit it to your left if you're Greg Bird there, and also because the runner may have shielded him.
Yeah, the runner shielding him is the biggest thing if it, in fact, actually did happen. I mean, from the angles that we could see, it did kind of look like it was happening because his reaction to it was a little late as well. It just didn't look like he saw the ball clearly. So, again, a play he should have made. It wasn't an egregious error. It was an egregious time to make an error.
One note on Chad Green. You mentioned that he has been great this season, which he has. But I saw this stat thrown around last season. Chad Green's slider, he only allowed a .274 slugging percentage against, and this year he's allowing a .727 slugging percentage against on his slider.
That's crazy. You never would have expected that by seeing his results, though, because he's been really good. I mean, last year he was historically lights out. I mean, they were all talking about him as the best guy in the bullpen. Like all the bullpen guys were talking about that. How he's got the best fastball. He's got the best stuff. I mean, he had a ridiculous year last year. So
it was the best season by a Yankees relief pitcher since Mariano in '96.
There you go. That's telling the story.
And he's been fantastic this year. So no complaints from Chad Green, but it's something to keep an eye on that slider. And he's thrown it only 81 times this season, so it's not like it's his go-to pitch. He is a fastball pitcher. He relies heavily on the fastball, and that's what he will continue to get batters out with. But that's a big difference between .274 to .727.
And it's interesting because Chad Green was actually in a lot more high leverage situations last year because Betances was bad and terrible, and Robertson wasn't on the team yet. Anyway, he was in a lot more high leverage situations than he's been this year, it seems like, just because there's the bullpen's a lot deeper now. And I wonder, how much that actually comes into play, because he's not going in as that eighth inning guy as much anymore, high leverage seventh inning spots.
But the way Girardi was using Green last year, if you remember, he would use him a lot of times for multiple innings, but he would never use him on back-to-back days. He was very careful about how he used Chad Green.
No, definitely. And I don't know how much that plays into it, because we know how he started. He started as a starting pitcher, couldn't break the break through as a starting pitcher, and ended up going back and just going with dumbing down the pitches. And he was effective as a two-pitch guy, and that's where he found his groove. So I wonder how much that actually plays into it, the fact that he wasn't used as much, and Girardi would hold him back to that one inning. And now he's definitely being used more often in two-inning spots.
All right, let's talk about Sonny Gray. 6 shutout innings. I think it's a perfect way for him to enter the All-Star break. He can kind of do a mental reset on everything that's happened in the first half of this season. But I also want to say, let's not get too excited, because we've seen this before from Sonny Gray, where it looks like he's figured it out, and then he goes out the next time or two starts down the road, and he looks absolutely lost. I went back and looked up all of his game logs this year. April 30th and May 5th, he had back-to-back starts that were both really good, and then he had a terrible start. He threw eight innings on May 20th, and then he went out and had a terrible start. He had good games on June 1st and June 6th, and then he's been bad ever since. So this is what Sonny Gray has done this season.
Yes, and nobody can get too excited about this. If you were following Twitter, Bronx Pinstripes, I was kind of making a joke of it, but every single inning, it was just like a one inning at a time, and I was playing gifts out there, because honestly, that's how you got to take him at this point. You got to go one inning at a time, damn near one batter at a time, to see if he can get through it. Because in the second inning, it almost looked like he was going to shut it down again. And after, he let a couple guys on, it looked like the wheels may have started to come off, but credit to him, he got through it. He was better. He was definitely more effective, in the sense that he seemed like he and Romine were had a good game plan, and they were effectively working each game or each batter the way that they wanted to. There wasn't a lot of shaking off. There wasn't a ton of time between. They had that one cross up that moved guys over. I think that was
a runner
on
second base. There was a runner on second
base. First and second. Yeah, it moved guys to second and third. But he got out of that inning. And again, credit to him, because that was a situation, a pickle, if you will, that I thought was going to blow it, and I thought it was going to here we go again situation, and it didn't. He came back and he was effective. He was really effective. He's been 2-0 before this game against the Orioles, so he's had success against this team, and that's a good thing, right? That's a good thing for you to come back out, know that you've had success, and come out and beat them again, because he did not do that when he was up in Toronto. For another time when, he's had clear success against them. So it's good to see. And, like you said, it's going to be a while now until he pitches. So maybe he can get his head on straight and think about this this win for a while.
I think that if you're Sonny Gray, you have to just focus on the little things, the little positive things. And just like, didn't we say on the last episode, keep it simple, stupid for Sonny Gray?
Right.
And that's what they did tonight. He threw 90 pitches and 84 of them were either two seamers or curveballs.
Yeah.
So they did not complicate things. He attacked the Orioles hitters, who are bad hitters, except Manny Machado. Like I said, he just kept it simple with two pitches. Don't think too much out there and just try and one baby step at a time, and then maybe we can get a snowball rolling downhill and Sonny Gray can turn back into the Sonny Gray they traded for.
That's the thing. Once he starts getting a little bit of confidence in the fact that he can, he can throw the ball over the plate, because that's his biggest problem. I mean, when he's ahead in the count, we know how he can be successful. Once he is able to get to that point where he can throw these pitches for strikes, then he can start opening up the repertoire and being that guy who, takes a little bit off of a curveball, a little bit off of a two seamer. Like, that's what he's done. He has multiple variations of each pitch. So, look, again, I'm not getting too excited about this either. It's a wait and see thing. It's a good start, no doubt about it. It's a good progression for now. He's just got to build on it, though. I mean, he's got a long way to go, I think, until anybody can really say that Sonny Gray has turned the corner. But definitely good. And he made a hell of an athletic play, too.
He
did. By the way, with that little
dribble.
Smiling.
He looked was smiling. Looked happy.
He did.
Haven't seen that Sonny Gray smile in a long
look at,
time.
Look at me. I just made a play. It was a very nice play.
So I also want to mention, I believe it was Rohan in our Facebook chat group that mentioned that even though it was two pitches, two seamer and curveball, he was actually throwing the curveball at different speeds. So that's kind of worked like three different pitches for him tonight.
Yeah. I mean, but that's his deal. That's what he does. He's able to throw those pitches. I mean, usually he's able to throw them for strikes at different speeds and, he can vary the arm angle slightly. He's just kind of been that guy that can throw different things. Even when you're, focusing on two to three pitches, he can change it up. But again, that's the Sonny Gray we thought we were getting. And today he looked like that guy. So good start.
How many starts is it going to take before he starts to change some Yankees fans' opinions?
Man, I don't even know. It's going to take a few. He's going to have to string some together. He's going to have to hit a groove. Like,
he's also going to have to do it at Yankee Stadium.
He's definitely going to have to do it at Yankee Stadium. He's going to have to do it against... We got to check boxes on this. Like, it's... Okay, first game now after he's been terrible again. Check the box. We got a good start. Okay. Now we need it at Yankee Stadium. We got to check that box. We got to check it off with an opponent that actually matters. We got to check that box off. There's a lot of different things that we need to start checking off for me to even remotely feel comfortable with him on the mound.
Right. Three of his good games.
I have been damaged by him. Okay. It's going to take a long time for me to come back.
Like we just said at the top of the show, the Yankees are 5-5 against the Orioles this year, and I believe Sonny Gray has three wins against the Orioles.
It's ridiculous. It's so ass backwards.
Up is down, down is up. It's bizarro world here.
Yeah. No, this is like a bad, this is a relationship. This is a dysfunctional, cheating relationship. You got to earn that trust back. I can't just trust you after you go back and you're bring me roses one time. Nah, not happening.
So how does Sonny Gray spend his All-Star break?
I don't know. You know, maybe, honestly, like, he needs to clear his head. I don't think he needs to do anything. I think he needs to go back to Tennessee, go fishing,
just sits
do
and
something.
Stares at a wall.
Yeah, do not do anything baseball related. Don't even just go and clear your damn mind.
Bust out a couple push-ups, get the blood flowing every now and again.
Or start going to like the meat locker and do some Rocky training and mm-hmm. start doing that Tennessee style. I could see that too.
Chug some raw eggs.
Yeah, I mean, look. I don't know what he's got to do, but I think that he's in uncharted territory at this point, so I don't think he knows what to do. And so we're just going to go with it.
Greg Bird had the three-run bomb on Tuesday against Andrew Cashner and then the grand slam Wednesday night. And that was a really good at-bat that he had. He fouled off 4 2-strike pitches. It was a deep at-bat, just kept the ball fair down the right field line. Looks like Greg Bird might be finally starting to turn into the spring training Greg Bird we all love.
of 2017.
Yeah, the 2017 MVP. Preseason MVP candidate, right. Greg Bird.
Right. I hope Sonny Gray doesn't take this long to come back because that would be a very long time. No, he's been looking good. He's been looking a lot more comfortable. There's no doubt about it. This is awesome to see the fact that he's making really good contact. I mean, he just missed a home run a couple pitches before the one that actually went out too. I mean, he was hitting the ball hard. But like you said, great at bat, and it's good to see him grind like that. It's good to see him get his legs. And you know, a lot of people are thinking like this was going to take him a little while to get back. You know, I thought it should be a little bit smoother of a comeback, especially when you have a long rehab and you have an extended spring training in AAA. I don't know. To me, a major league hitter should be able to make that adjustment. But it's taken him longer.
Well, you should know by now, nothing is easy with Greg.
Oh, I know that. I know that. I'm talking in generality, I think, with just major league guys when they come back from an injury. But, you know, he's been down for so long and you know, like, you got to get back into the groove. You get back into the routines. You got to get back into all these different things. So, whatever, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is he's hitting right now and just in time for the All-Star break to cool off.
Why do you have to rain on my parade like that? My Greg Bird parade. You know how much I love Greg Bird.
Yeah, I mean, hey, man, he makes his team so much better when he's on. When he's on,
yes,
we've talked about this, like the lineup is actually
balanced.
It's balanced. It's what you want. I mean, that number three hitter, if Greg Bird is right, is you know, a pure hitter who can hit the ball out of the park that breaks up the big righties. And that's important and that's huge, especially when you get down the stretch and you're facing a lot of these tough, tough starting pitchers. If you have a balanced lineup like that and a lethal lineup at that, you know, with the balance, then, you know, you're that much more difficult for the starting pitcher to get through that lineup three times.
The Yankees have had virtually no power from the left side, especially after Didi got cooled off after April. No power from the left side this season.
Right. Yeah, no, it's definitely been an issue. But he makes a big difference. I mean, he is that guy. He's definitely that guy.
Which is why the Manny Machado to the Yankees rumors are interesting, I guess, for lack of a better word. I at first thought when I saw Ken Rosenthal put out that post that the Yankees are, quote, in on Manny Machado, I just thought that's some smoke, that maybe it's the Orioles leaking some reports to get some other teams to get off their ass and make some offers for it. But there are a lot of reports that the Yankees have made strong offers to the Orioles for Manny Machado. Zach Britton could or could not be involved in a possible deal. I think he probably would be involved in a possible deal. But this has just turned Yankees fans upside down this week, this whole Manny Machado saga.
Yeah, I think Manny Machado is one of the best players in baseball. You know, he's probably a top three player in baseball. I think he's that good. I think he's an all-world talent. The problem I have with this whole thing is, yeah, it's exciting to think about Manny Machado on the Yankees. That's fine and dandy. And then Zach Britton, if he was the guy that we saw a couple nights ago, he looked much better than he has for the beginning of the season. You know, you're giving up some serious, serious talent, some serious depth in your farm system for a guy that's going to be here for half of a season, less than half of a season, and then, you know, potentially playoffs if you get that far. You're talking about that. You're also talking about a rental, and usually a rental is a guy who's going to come and fill a void. this is not the case for this team. This is why it doesn't make sense to me. Why are you going to give up an asset that you can use, a high-level asset that you can use for an actual part of your team that is not strong, a starting pitcher, whether it's now or in the offseason? These assets will be there for you to acquire starting pitching. And if you move them for a guy that you're going to, that you already have a good third baseman who's in your system forever since 16 years old and is a leading candidate for rookie of the year, it's not a problem. The offense is not a problem. Third base is not a problem. Machado wants to play damn shortstop. That's not a problem.
There's so many different factors to this whole thing. I've been arguing with people for 24 hours on that point, the exact point you just made about why are you going to trade prospects? Why are you going to give up assets for a rental when you could just have that player in 3 months in the winter for just money, when it doesn't really solve your problem at hand right now, which is starting pitching? And people's argument are, well, why are you just assuming that Brian Cashman is only going to make one move? He can get Manny Machado and get a pitcher. And to that I say, why not use the most assets you possibly can to get the best possible starting pitcher that you possibly can? Why am I just going to give away prospects? It could be Justice Sheffield is being talked about. Clint Frazier is being talked about. Other guys are being talked about for Manny Machado. Why would I give up one of those guys when the Yankees do not need Manny Machado in 2018 to win a World Series? Does Manny Machado make the Yankees better right now? Yes, obviously. Like, Manny Machado is one of the three best players in baseball. If anyone is arguing they're not, it doesn't make the Yankees better, I think that person is stupid. But it only makes them marginally better. A starting pitcher could make them immensely better.
That's the biggest difference. There is a clear weakness on this team. It's so abundantly clear over every single part of this entire squad, the roster, and it's the starting pitching. It's not even debatable. The offense is not a problem. Third base, particular, is not a problem. Shortstop, not a problem. It just doesn't make sense. And for a rental, if you're talking about just a rental, if it's a starting pitcher, if it's a closer, like when the Cubs were going for the World Series, they needed a closer, and they went out and they got a closer,
they hadn't won it in 108 years,
and they paid a premium, but it was a void. They didn't go out there and say, "Oh, we can get this guy who maybe will hit 5 more home runs in the second half than the guy that we currently have. Maybe he'll hit for 15 points higher in his average, and he'll play a little bit better of a defense." Like, yes, he's a better player than Andujar is, and there's no doubt. I will not dispute that. But you mentioned it does not make – it's marginal. It doesn't make the team that much better. The team's offense and defense, as it stands right now, could win a World Series. The pitching could not.
Yeah, exactly. Does it change – let's first talk about this. People are just assuming that Manny Machado is going to go play third base because he is just going to put on the pinstripes and magically.
Well, A-Rod did, so why wouldn't Machado do it?
Right, and A-Rod was Manny Machado's idol growing up, so he's just going to magically see the rainbows and unicorns that is the Bronx and the pinstripes. He's just going to agree to do something that he has been stubborn about all season.
Yeah, and he's been terrible.
Why are we
shortstop.
Assuming that?
He's been a bad
shortstop.
He's been
a horrible shortstop. He's been a very poor defensive shortstop. He's a great defensive third baseman, but he's been a poor defensive shortstop. And Didi is a great defensive shortstop. So if you were to say, okay, well, Machado will play shortstop and you can move Didi around the infield, well, then you're weakening two positions.
That doesn't make any sense. Didi's not anything but a shortstop. If anybody were to do that, it's ludicrous, especially in the middle of a season. So the only way that would ever happen for him to come over would have to be played third base, because they're not going to move Didi. That's just, look, this is why I don't think this whole thing is makes any sense on either side. It doesn't.
If he does agree to play third base and then they take Andujar and trade him for a starting pitcher?
No, I still don't like it. Because I don't think that you can. It depends on who you're getting for Andujar, because I think you're going to have to give up way more than that. So no, I don't like the rental situation of this trade. I just don't.
So you get Yankees could get Machado.
Because you're going to give up Machado, but you also have to give up assets for Machado too. So not only are you giving up the third baseman of your future, because people assume for whatever reason that Machado is going to sign with the Yankees if he's here for the half a year. Well, that's just not the case.
He's going to take the most money.
Did Chapman sign with the Cubs? No, he didn't. Did he say he'd think about it? Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, exactly. He's a mercenary. He's going to sign where the money is. So you're not only are you getting a guy for half a season. less than half a season, but you're also giving up your long-term third baseman. Then you have to go out and find a starting pitcher. Okay, so you have to go out, for the starting pitcher, but then you also have to acquire Machado. And right now the rumors are Justice Sheffield, Clint Frazier. So now you're gutting your pitching in the farm system too to get a guy that's not a pitcher. Look, everything about this doesn't make sense to me. The puzzle pieces don't fit. I don't get it. And not only that, but you're doing it in division.
Yeah, if you're going to trade Justice Sheffield and Clint Frazier, especially if you're going to trade him in division, it can't be for a rental and it can't be for a position you don't need. It needs to be for a starting pitcher.
Yeah, and Baltimore has none of them.
Well, we know
that. I'm saying there is not one pitcher on that team that could be thrown into any deal that would make this team better. Just won't.
Britain?
No, starting pitcher.
Starting pitcher, right. But with the Machado thing and if Cashman were, though, do you think Cashman might have something in mind with Andujar where he's saying, this is why I'm keeping this Machado in my back pocket?
Maybe. I've said all along that I think Andujar is one of the guys that is movable and
high value right now.
But that's because of Drury as well. There are people that can come in and play third base right now that would be marginally less, but still, you know, it's almost a situation where if Machado were to come in instead of Andujar, you're getting a marginal better with Machado. Whereas if you move Andujar, you'd be having Drury, who did win the... I mean, people forget that Drury was the starting third baseman coming out of camp. He won the job. He was the guy that was going to be the third baseman for the New York Yankees on opening day. And so we're talking about a guy that has already proved that he can play, you know, especially if he's playing every day. But yeah, I think they're going to be dangling him, and I think Cashman is dangling him. Here's the other thing about this. All this talk, this is all a bunch of, like, these are speculations coming out from every beat writer possible. The first Ken Rosenthal article said nothing. It just said, oh, the Yankees, because they have a better...
It was a headline.
It was a headline.
Headline for clicks.
And they say they have a bigger farm system, so they could probably do better than anybody. Okay, the Dodgers could probably do that too, you know? And the Dodgers actually need a shortstop because their guy, Seager, is hurt. That's a fit. He could go over and play shortstop.
Brewers have a need for Machado too, and they have a fantastic farm system.
So I don't see how this, as far as like a fit goes, that it can make sense. So that's why I think a lot of this is smoke. Whether it's coming from the Orioles, that's probably the case. I guarantee it's not coming from the Yankees. So yeah, I still think it's smoke. If it happens, I would be surprised.
Wouldn't it also feel a little dirty?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it. I want to win with these guys.
Already
these are the
got
guys.
Stanton. They added Stanton. They added the big name star, the National League MVP. They added that to the lovable bunch of 2017 Yankees last season. Now we'd be adding Machado. It's something about it just seems dirty. I don't know how else to explain it. Where rooting for that would not be as enjoyable as rooting for the guys that are currently on this team plus a starting pitcher. Like, you want to tell me you're going to go out and get a top line starting pitcher? That doesn't feel dirty because right. They need that.
Right.
This is gluttonous. Exactly. Yeah. This is going to one of those Las Vegas buffets and going up there for a fifth time, just loading the mac and cheese on there.
And hasn't Cashman learned his lesson in that, you know, with going out and getting all these free agents, you know, back when they signed, when they got A-Rod finally, then they signed Sabathia, they got Burnett, they got Ellsbury, like they started adding all these guys and they became a team of Teixeira was signed with the team. They got all of their guys, as mercenaries basically to come over to this team. And it worked temporarily, but it just doesn't work like that. And not to say that because this team has such a young, strong nucleus, this Machado thing wouldn't work. But I don't know. I think Cashman's a little gun-shy.
Well, he's also young.
There's a lot of pressure.
In his prime.
But there's a ton of... I mean, you add Machado to that. I mean, you better win the World Series.
Oh, it's
for,
crazy.
For how many years? Because you better win it.
Not one. Not two. Not three.
There's nothing... You cannot lose. You have to win the World Series. It's that type of move.
At least
And then you still don't have a pitcher.
right, exactly. They'd still need to get like 5+ innings out of their bullpen on 2 or 3 nights.
So guess what? Our offense will still be very good.
right.
I mean, it's crazy.
At least people could bust out the number 13 jerseys again for Manny Machado.
Yeah, that's worth it.
Reuse
right there.
Those old things.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that a, there you go. There's another downside. The merchandising would be down because people would just recycle their old A-Rod crap.
Nah, I don't think they'd give him number 13. Oh, you special think, advisor you A-Rod.
Really? You think
special
13
advisor A-Rod, yeah.
You think 13 it's not officially retired, but it's unofficially not going to be given out?
Unfortunately, I think that's the case with number 13.
I don't know. A-Rod's still got some time to screw things up.
Oh, it could change. Very well, it could change.
Yeah.
Giancarlo Stanton did not win the final vote. I guess Yankees fans don't like Stanton. Didn't want to go out and vote for him. It's kind of lame.
I mean, we were complaining about him for a very long time this season, so it would have been disingenuous kind of to send him to the All-Star game at this point because he's had a really hot, 2 weeks.
He's been good. No, he's been good.
The power, I know. The power was there. I'm saying he's definitely turned it on quite a bit for the past month. But the Yankee fans have been complaining about him all season long. The bottom line is Yankee fans don't vote on these things. They don't come out in waves like the Kansas City Royals do or the Dodgers do or apparently the Seattle Mariners do. Those fans apparently like to vote online a lot.
Mariners fans are pumped up this season. That team, I think, don't they have the longest playoff drought in Major League Baseball?
I don't even want to think about that because the last time I'm even thinking about them is when they knocked my boy Donnie Baseball out. So, well, yeah, they've been back
0-1.
Since then.
I think 0-1 is the last time they were in the playoffs.
I mean, I can't stand the Mariners, so I hope they don't make it. I really do, but it seems like they're going to.
I was looking up some Stanton stats, and I was very surprised to see he actually leads the Yankees in hits. He had, I think, 4 hits tonight, so he's up to 98 hits on the season, which leads the Yankees.
It's amazing to see how this guy, when he's on, he's very good. But when he's off, he looks like a guy that doesn't even know how to play baseball. And that's what he looked like in the beginning of the season.
He looks like the drunk guy in softball who's just swinging out of his shoes.
Yeah. Like the comparison I made before, like that's the stance I would get to hit to the girl in right field in slow pitch softball. Like I would close my stance off, be completely obvious about it, and put a ball down the line at the girl who can't run or field. And then I would just keep running.
But if you were to give me 5 guesses to start the season on who will lead the Yankees in hits for the first half of the season, I don't think I would have said Stanton in the top 5.
In the top 5? I probably would have put him in the top 5. But
hits, though? Hits? He's home runs, sure. Extra base hits, sure.
But that's all he does. He only hits.
I got four singles tonight.
I know, but in his career, really, he gets home runs and he gets extra base hits. That's it. But he has a lot of them. He hits a lot of them. He hits them in quantities.
So the Yankees have 4 games in Cleveland before the All-Star break. Looks like the Yankees, well, it's going to be Severino versus Kluber on Thursday. That's an exciting
pitching matchup. Yeah.
Yes, very fun. Potential playoff pitching matchup.
Hell yeah.
And then looks like they're going to go with Herman, Sabathia, and Tanaka before the All-Star break. Sonny Gray, like we said, does not get another start before the time off. Cleveland, the Yankees swept Cleveland back in May. This is when they were on their unbelievable hot streak. They had 2 walk-offs, totally demolished the Cleveland bullpen, who is still without Andrew Miller. Back in that series in the Bronx, the Yankees scored 8 runs in 4 2/3 innings against the Cleveland bullpen. And their bullpen has the highest ERA in Major League Baseball, 5.37.
That's crazy when you think about who's in the back end of that bullpen when healthy, that yep. they're struggling so bad. And didn't they lose? They lost somebody to Tommy John too, right? The young kid. He's not young anymore, but he was a starting pitcher that came out. Anyway, they've lost some injuries, I think, in the bullpen. But they're just and they lost their bullpen coach, Mickey Callaway. Maybe he made a big difference. They're not dry humping in the bullpen anymore.
God. Well, the Indians though could just basically sleepwalk to that division title. They're starting to turn it on now, but they're going to win that division easily. The second best team is under 500, and that's the Minnesota Twins in that division.
Yeah, and the Twins are severely underperforming compared to what they. Maybe they just overperformed last year, but they have no competition. Yeah, you're right. They just need to get healthy. Like that's their key now. Let's get healthy and make sure that we're good towards the end of the second half.
So before the All-Star break, anything you want to see out of this team this weekend? Maybe Greg Bird stays hot, or maybe Sonny Gray doesn't say anything dumb to the media.
Well, no, Sonny Gray only talks dumb to the media when he struggles, when it's about him, when it's something that's, you know, that he did. Danny Salazar is the guy that I was talking about, is ruled out for the season. But the big thing I'm looking at now is I want to see Two things. I want to see Herman build off. I want to see him have a good start against Cleveland. I think that would be something really good to see, some momentum going into the second half, because he's going to be a key player as a part of this rotation down the stretch. I mean, he's definitely going to, depending on what happens in free agency, or I'm sorry, in at the trade deadline, you know, he's going to be a key part of it. Even if they get somebody, you look at the options, there just aren't very many good options. And I don't know how many of them are better than Herman, maybe none.
So Herman was also rumored and thrown around in the Manny Machado rumors.
Again, that makes no sense to me. You're stealing from your own kitchen at that point to feed a fat ass dude on third base who's not hungry. It's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. But so anyway, so Herman, I want to see. I'd like to see him pitch well against Cleveland. That would be a very good positive taking. And then Tanaka, you know, having him build off of what he did last time, go a little deeper and maybe throw a fastball a little bit more often. But Tanaka's again another key part. You know, all these key parts that we're talking about are starting pitchers.
Herman's first start when he went 6 no hit innings came against Cleveland.
Yeah.
So he's got some confidence against that team.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's been, I think, you know, we've had some bumps in the road with him, but there he seems like he's rebounded well from a lot of the bumps too, and he's he's proved that he can come back from adversity. So yeah, I really like what I see from him, and I would love for him to get a good start against Cleveland and then hit the second half running, because I think he's got, you know, a ton of talent.
All right, that's going to do it for us on this show. Just a reminder to submit mailbag questions. We do mailbag questions every Monday show. So bring the heat with those. Go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. That's where you can submit. Or you can tweet us at Yankees Podcast. You can also post questions in the Facebook group. Just search the Bronx Pinstripe Show in Facebook, and you'll see a ton of chatter going on there. Scott, anything else you want to say before we head out?
Yeah, the Facebook group is another easy way to get to it is Yankees. If you go to facebook.com/YankeesBP. Pretty easy, and you'll find us there. And there's a ton of conversations in there, so a lot of fun. If you haven't got your tickets yet for the Subway Series, go get them. Stop waiting. They're going to be gone soon. It's going to be a ton of fun at the Bronx Brewery. And looking forward to seeing everybody on the 22nd.
Talk to you guys in a few days.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.